cup. We said we should go outside, and maybe we will. We don't do many work sessions, or we don't do them that often. But this was one of the things that they kind of on the heels of being here in Rexville and seeing the completion of this project that started a number of years ago. And I think it's a testament to the leadership, consistent leadership, and really kind of following the parameters of the way we were founded. We thought it was a very good time. Really, this is kind of the five-year check-in, kind of looking at the pillars that we were really working off of: protection, relevancy, engagement, connections, organizational sustainability, which was all part of our strategic plan, part of our fiscal responsibility. Certainly, we tweaked them a little bit over time. I think as we're kind of going through that next five, kind of looking back into what we've been able to accomplish, and then kind of pivoting ourselves forward. So Sean and Kelly and a few others, give us your work sessions. So if you have questions, comments, you want to just kind of weigh in, this is kind of what it's designed for. So I just wanted to tee it up for Sean, kind of giving the introduction. The seven key directions actually turned into five because we were able to accomplish some things and we can refine them a bit. So Sean, take it away.
Great, thanks, Ben. Good morning again, commissioners. This is really kind of a fun thing to do because it's so much we're always looking forward. And we were talking as a group a few weeks ago about next steps and about another and the next strategic plan, about the levy cycles. And this really gives us this great opportunity to just pause for a moment and look back so that when we do look forward again, we understand what we've accomplished and what we can move on from. So in 2012, the board adopted the Cleveland Metro Parks 2020 MLMECA Centennial Plan. And in that plan, as well, we're able to list seven key directives, everything from green infrastructure to the scale of the park district, seeing that we continue those efforts into Cleveland and its intermingling suburbs, having a focus on outdoor recreation, building that regional greenway system, moving to the lakefront and making sure that the district itself was financially sustainable. By 2015, several of those key directives had been accomplished. So we came back to you in 15 with a very concise update to the plan and focused then protection, connections. At the time it was come out in play, it is the community engagement portion of those five key strategic objectives. Relevancy and organizational sustainability. From there, what we wanted to do was take a quick look back at what we've been able to do in this time, and we're going to focus some of those accomplishments on those five key strategic goals. So, like I said, 2012, the strategic plan was adopted. In 2013, the levy was then passed with flying colors. That was quickly followed with the CAPR presentations and the private levy, the economic benefits study that you today saw the 2018 version of. In 2013, that was the last time that we had gone through that exercise. And then in 2014, we saw plans developed for those lakefront parks that had been acquired in June 6th of 2013. Also in 2014, we saw Whiskey Island come online in December. 2015, we then started that process of going around to the legacy parks and making sure that we had updated plans for each one of those reservations. In 2015, we started with Acacia, Euclid Creek, North Chagrin, South Chagrin, and we took those plans and looked at them through the lens of the five strategic goals that the 2015 plan brought to us. Then we continued southwest or southeast of Bedford, Rexville, and Hinckley in 2017, continued that process with Big Creek, Brookside, and Garfield, OEC, in Washington. Also in 2017, with our push for further capital accreditation, we developed a historic cultural resource management plan. 2018, the present, we have worked very hard for re-accreditation through the CAPA process. As you saw today, we've updated our economic benefits with the Trust for Public Land. And we have continued on the reservation planning focus this year, Huntington Bradley Woods, Rocky River, and Millstream. Also, we partnered with Cuyahoga County Planning Commission and many of the municipalities on the Greenways Plan. And then next year, believe it or not, we will actually be returning to the lakefront. It will be 5 years since the last time we did the plan for the lakefront parks. and it'll be a good opportunity for us to take another look forward and build off the successes that we've been able to gain on the lakefront. 2020 then gives us the ability to potentially develop an update or a new strategic plan and hone in what we've learned in the decade preceding to 2020, because technically that's when our current master plan or strategic plan is set to sunset. And then we prepare in 21 and 22 for our preparations for our next levy cycle. So this gives us the ability to take a quick look back. Now I'm going to go through quickly those five key strategic goals to give some examples of what we've been able to do in those years. So from all these facts, really from 2012 to the present, and it's amazing to see, especially on the land protection portion, just from 2012, and the great work of Rose and Kyle, Stephanie and Isaac, where you can see year by year how we are increasing the size of the park district in a built out environment, and thus incrementally protecting those very strategic districts and locations. So going from 22,217 acres in 2012 incrementally to 23,605, which includes some pending acquisitions. So back to, if you remember, the 2012 goals, talking about moving into Cleveland and the inner-ring suburbs. We have here two communities that were added to the list since 2012 of who we serve with land and parks, and those communities are Lyndhurst and Maple Heights. And both of those are very important into what we've been able to do as a park district in executing our strategic plan.
Those were brand new in those 2 years.
So in 2012, with the Acacia and the 155 plus acres there, and then Maple Heights, the 55 acres with Dunham Park and the team. And the major new acquisition from 2012 on, first and foremost, Acacia in 2012, Rivergate also in 2012, and then very notable, the lakefront acquisitions in 2013 with the 511 acres there. Work on the East Branch, the Rocky River, and Heron Rookery, Whiskey Island in December of 14, and Timberlane, Kushka, Cleveland Foundation Centennial Trails, Palmieri in 2017, Aspenhurst, and Dunham Park in 18. There's 177 acres there just between those two acquisitions alone. And you can see just the breadth and the geography from 2012 on, where these acquisitions occurred, and it's really spread all amongst the park district, which is a testament to making sure we have focus all throughout.
Can you go back, Sean? I think it's just really important to note that 5% is all of the matching funds and our own public dollars that we put into all of this acquisition. And I also earlier in the agenda appreciated with all the grants that we're going after that you're showing the percentage that is our dollars versus all the other dollars we're leveraging. I mean, that's incredible.
It is. The team does such an amazing job of leveraging a small amount of funds into high
huge benefits.
Acacia, which is very notable in terms of the restoration and the protection that we've been able to bring through partnerships with Ohio EPA, the WRSP funds, and the Conservation Fund funds as well, with 14 acres of wetlands reestablished, 1,500 feet of stream restoration. Just an amazing transformation that we've been able to see at Acacia. And then stepping back from Acacia and looking throughout literally the entire planet and the zoo's mission of securing the future for wildlife and their work in more than 12 countries, six signature projects, more than $2.5 million of investment towards wildlife conservation projects throughout the entire globe, literally. And then back looking now hyper-local, back to the green infrastructure activities. We've seen over 14 projects since 2012 and 10 reservations. And these activities help not only retain stormwater, but increase biodiversity and really help educate the public into these major issues we see throughout the region in stormwater. And then natural resources since 2012, we've really seen the ability that they have to work with partnering institutions and other agencies. 2015, they issued 18 permits. So these are to outside parties and entities to come in and assist and augment some of the research efforts. And then in 2017, we saw that number increase up to 25. And this data is crucial, as you saw from John and from some of the other preceding presentations. We're able to use a lot of this data to make decisions going forward and be knowledgeable about what's going on in our district. And then looking more regionally again, working with the 8 total park districts here towards not only the protection of Black River Corridor, East Branch of the Rocky River, West Branch of the Rocky River, Tinker's Creek, Chagrin River watershed. We're working in a lot of these examples to see are not only protection-based, but they can be used throughout all 5 of the key strategic goals. Not only are we looking for protection with our partner park agencies, but connections between and among these parks. Kelly is going to take us into the relevancy portion.
All right, good morning. So I'd like to summarize relevancy really as, you know, we've made tremendous progress expanding our parks, but we can't control every acre in Cuyahoga County. So how can we take our core mission, our core values, and expand those out and engage with our surrounding communities, particularly the city of Cleveland and the entering suburbs? It's been a while. I'm wasting on this. This is forward?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. And looking at these different aspects, we heard from Trishna a few months ago about the health study that she worked with, and expanding that definition of study to include not only physical well-being, also mental health and community connections with that social health. And we see aspects of improvements to that throughout the parks. So her recent research is helping us kind of fine-tune some of our activities and even some future research opportunities. Taking the resources we have, both in staff and facilities, and expanding our outreach, the work with Miami University with the Advanced Inquiry Program, contributing to the education and the degrees with 72 folks graduating from the program, but engaging with hundreds and hundreds of students. Zoo project highlights, you know, people engage with the natural world in different ways, and by constructing some of these new exhibits and facilities, we're reaching an even wider audience. Just some quick examples of those capital projects that have been created, and I think we've seen all the success of those. Our participation in community planning, Bruce, I was really glad to hear you mention, you know, the home rule issue. One way that we can engage, we have various staff that are invited to serve on stakeholder committees as communities are preparing their master plans. And just the simple actions of maybe if they can enact a tree protection ordinance, you know, again, expanding way beyond our boundaries to see some improvements, working with them for connectivity to our parks, and helping engage, you know, the entire county in the efforts we're working toward. We're fortunate to work with such competent, great local partners. Land Studio, we see the value at $2.5 million of land that's been contributed by them. West Creek Conservancy, $6.5 million. Just helping us grow our parks, helping us, you know, serve our mission, and continuing to work toward those goals. Western Reserve Land Conservancy is another partner. We heard just this morning of new opportunities. And then the Conservation Fund. When you look at that net value, we're now right around $15 million in donations that we've received through the Conservation Fund. Then using our influence to help promote local projects, Slavic Village Community Development Corporation and their efforts to connect the existing Morgana Run Trail to downtown Cleveland, and also then south to Washington Reservation, helps us link our system to the broader community and is, an initiative that is really led by the community and that we're pushing our support behind it. Ways that we can touch new folks, we have this historic landmark that's just, you know, an icon along the lakefront, and we were able to figure out a strategy to activate that and bring more people to it and stabilize it for future generations. So I think the Coast Guard Station is a great example too. The lakefront activation, know, these are much more than parties, more than, you know, we get folks to the lakefront, we engage, you know, this year it's about 125,000 people. So the lake isn't just an abstract concept, it's something they've experienced, it's something they've touched, and we're building stewardship through these events. Plus they're a lot of fun, right? And kind of in a similar fashion, as we have facilities within the park, our shelters and our rental facilities allow us to draw people that maybe haven't, you know, maybe they haven't visited the park, but their aunt is having a family reunion, or we're able to get new visitors and really engage them in the value of spending time in our parks. So this distribution shows that our renters aren't only the neighbors to the parks, but are distributed throughout Cuyahoga County and beyond our borders too. And then the mobile outreach. I love this image of Nature Tracks downtown. It really shows how our outdoor experiences staff is able to go to where the people are to take our message and our educational capabilities to engage people where they are. And so building on that point of engagement, the programs that we host within the parks with outdoor experiences continue to grow, continue to reach new audiences, and special recognition too to all the centennial events, drawing great recognition to our system and its history. We do look at the distribution of who we're serving with these programs and find that it is well distributed throughout Cuyahoga County. Employee engagement. This might seem like a different one to include, but maintaining a place that draws the highest quality applicants and performs at high levels is really important to us, and we've been greatly successful at that. And then also pointing out, it's not just engagement, you know, during the 8-to-5 workday, but engagement with outside organizations. So we have a statistic of over 50 employees volunteering their time. And that's not just on an hourly basis, that's in a leadership capacity with outside organizations. So environmental organizations, educational societies, we have a few elected officials, and then just service on numerous community boards. So we are, you know, an active and engaged workforce. Back to the zoo, you know, continually achieving program attendance around 250,000 people on an annual basis, and providing those services and that, you know, ongoing outreach. And then to our special events. We've heard the success of Asian Lanterns, things like NeoCycle, which is the photo up in the upper right, centennial events, and then our educational programs. I hope everybody saw the banner out front for Fall Fest coming up, but we just continue to draw and engage people in all different aspects in our parks. And with that, we'll turn to talk more about the physical connections.
Okay, I'm gonna try to go through these pretty quickly, but the connections, we need to work within the park district, but also with our partners to make these new connections, especially the larger regional ones. One of the things that we did was introduce the water taxi service, and it is a partnership with ArcelorMittal that makes this possible. And in August 2018, there was 42,000 guests that rode, and then our highest record day was almost 2,000 people on Saturday, August 18th. But this provides an important connection across the river. It's a short connection, obviously seasonal, but one of the ways that we are fulfilling our mission. And then implementation partners on some of these larger projects like the Tiger Grants and Tiger Projects and these regional connections that take many hands to build and many funding sources to build. And then our Cuyahoga Greenways Plan, this was working with the Cuyahoga County Planning Commission to look at a regional Trails and Greenways framework, and then we can additionally engage through our community planning efforts with master plans with communities, those local connections to this larger network. And then our all-purpose trails, we have 113 miles of all-purpose trails as of right now. This number has grown significantly since 2012, so almost a little over 12 and a half miles since 2012. And we've also paved existing trails and made improvements to them, and then acquired trails through acquisitions of occasion, lakefront parks. Natural surface and mountain bike trails, again, Ralph's crew has done a great job. 26 miles of new trails and then significant amount of reconstructed trails throughout the park district. And then for organizational sustainability, you know, this is a big part of the strategic plan to make sure that we're delivering on our mission in a way that is very responsible. And so we take this undergirds a lot of the other categories that were already talked about as well. So we have our gold medal award CAPRA accredited. You know, these are just ways that we are making sure that we're achieving at a very high level, have very high standards, and are keeping ourselves accountable. That also transfers over to Rangers with the CALEA certification as well. You know, this is a very limited pool of agencies that are CALEA certified, so this is, again, a testament to the high standards. We have some amazing stats for the infrastructure maintenance that has occurred since the strategic plan. Just the number of roofs replaced, 52 roofs, the miles of APT paved, 42 miles of parkway. This is a lot of work. These are things that have to be done to maintain our network and maintain what we already have and just, you know, keep achieving. We've also been active in repairs for Seneca Golf Course. These are the types of things, you know, you have to make these investments in order to prolong the life and draw people back to these assets for the community. So Seneca is seeing quite a bit of investment and love. Grants and donations, you've seen this information before, it's a little hard to read on here. But we do actively go out for grants and donations. That slide earlier with the acquisitions, the 2017 acquisitions, that 5% was using Cleveland Metro Parks funds. This does fluctuate from year to year, but you can see from there that we use a lot of outside funding and outside resources to make everything work within the park district. Trail infrastructure grant funding sources, this is a big one where, you know, we are using those outside funds and leveraging what we can to be able to build additions to the network to serve our guests. And then partnership with entities like the Cleveland Zoological Society. These are longstanding partnerships and we rely very heavily on them. And they're an important part of our mission as well. And then enterprise highlights. It's hard to summarize everything that enterprise has been doing, but can just see the amount of revenue coming in 2017. This was one of the things that was pointed out in the last strategic plan that we were not doing very well, was, you know, trying to get ahead and get some of the additional funding into the park system as another way of supporting. So this has been a big success for the park district. And then finally, sustainability. You know, we are a parks organization. Sustainability is very important to us with conservation. We have a lot of internal policies and procedures in place to make sure that we're functioning in a very sustainable manner. And I think that is at the end. So we want to open it up to questions, conversation, discussion at this point.
Can we get this PowerPoint?
Absolutely. I think it was one of those things where, again, this is just open dialogue. When we talked about putting this together, it was one of those things of looking at the balance of new acquisitions, the sustainability of funding, and how do we look to, you know, kind of pivot to those next 5 years. And when you look at roads and, you know, roofs and painting, and, you know, we've been taking care of the infrastructure. I think back in Jim's here, you know, when we look at our pavement, you know, across the country, of how poor the quality was across so many different areas, and how we've been able to improve that, and not just improve that, but it's improving the water collection system. We've been doing all the culverts and all the work underneath the roads to really help the park district as well for the future. Then you look at, you know, really, I would say, following protection elements. I mean, we really worked very hard putting together basically what we thought lived up to what we said we were going to do to for this levy cycle. So.
I had one comment, Brian. You know, when you're doing a five-year plan, it's very what it is it's how you spend your resources. And your resources are two. They're money and people. And I think it helps to look back on the last 5 years financially and categorize it in various categories. And you've all listed a whole bunch of categories here. But we have to look at the past to look at the future. I mean, like things like 5%, you know, that's a wonderful number. Probably not attainable for the next 10 to 5 years, but it might be, you know, the 5%, the leverage that we get out of 5%. And then I think the other thing is, I mean, breaking it down, so you're looking at land acquisition, land enhancement, building construction, nature enhancements, education. And if you break this down and look at the past 5 years with people and money in categories, it really helps to be able to determine how you want to reshape or return it. And then once you've done that, then you can allocate it more specifically in these various groups. But I think what you want to end up with is an initial game plan that will change significantly, but at least it's a plan where it's based in numbers and economics.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree, but what strikes me, and I assume this is, you're all very conversant in learning as you go along, but this whole idea of sustainability of how these resources are handled. I look at best management practices as one example, but it strikes me that the data collection this organization has undertaken for benchmarking and really analyzing how as much as what is being done is very educational, that you're learning that if, like the trails, creating a different type of trail network, it improves ecology. You do it in a way that it's easier to maintain that trail. You do it right the first time, for example. It sounds to me that we've gone from an older system of how the resource, just the infrastructure is built. It's being designed in a different way, and we're learning how to design things so that we get more bang for the buck. I guess that's the only way to describe it. Is that something that you all see that you're measuring? It just seems to me that that's been very much part of what this last 5 years has done. It's getting a database to understand how to do these things more efficiently for a longer term.
I would argue that you've established a base, and then you look ahead and you say, what's wrong with the base we've established? And let's take trails as a great example. We've done a damn good job with trails. I mean, if you've ridden some of these bike paths, I mean, they are designed extremely well. Now, looking forward, do we want to design them better? Are we saying we think we can do that better? Or would we like, with a limited amount of money and manpower, should we build more? And it's the same, the quality is, we got the quality right. Now in some things we don't have the quality right. And we have to say, you know, the quality is not right. We may have to either build up more resources, more manpower, just to get the standards back to where they are. And maybe that may mean holding back a little bit. You know, so to me, I think if you start with manpower and money, it begins to guide the way of how you're going to allocate these special resources, and I think we have to look at the past, and maybe it's just a year of the past, and say how are we doing? I mean, are we doing enough with replanting? Are we spending enough on nature preservation and the sort of stuff that John went over with us today, and then just. Balance it, and then from the math model.
Let's take an example. We just improved the hydrilla. Do I assume correctly that one of the reasons we got refunded is because we can demonstrate how effective it is, how those dollars are being utilized well?
I think it's, you know, the answer is
to
yes.
That point. Yeah.
And I would say, you know, early on we got good at getting them, and then we had trouble kind of executing, pulling them through, filling the paperwork, getting them. And we've gotten very, very good at, and I would say, outside funding sources want to partner with agencies that actually can deliver the project. I think another great example is the Tiger project, only the second one. And it was not the first money in it, it was the last money, and they didn't want to be in a project that they had to basically have it on the front end, they wanted to be able to close it out. And the fact that the team had done so much work getting all of the resources lined up, and to be very quick, we lost, we didn't win the first time, we got it the second time. And we had to learn from, and I think, you know,
we can blackboard this stuff, we can show it. So it's not just, it's digital, not analog. I mean, there's something about it, it seems to me, that we just handle much more comprehensively the kind of data that tells a story.
Taking your example now, do you think in the future, we know what we've spent on programming, trying to get programs, fundraising on a big level, and then we look forward, would you think we should spend more, less, or the same amount of manpower and resources on that? That's kind of where I'm going.
And I think, you know, it's one of those things where it's, we as an agency are adaptable with the Board of Court Commissioners. When you look at, I don't know if you noticed, but in 2011 was a very interesting year. There were a lot of zeros that kind of went across, and you know, it was kind of a post-recession, and a lot of the funding sources weren't there, and you know, we were not able to secure land, we weren't able to leverage things, and when we came out of that, we had a new team kind of put in place to go after these things. So the answer is, it kind of depends, Commissioner. So we're not going to go after things that aren't enhancing this park district for, you know, the next 100 years. And, as Bruce knows, we spent time with the five kind of county area around us, really looking at this 70,000 foot view of connecting trails. So I would say the pivot would be, how do we partner with our other park districts as much as we're doing and delivering models internally through the Metro Parks, more of the inner ring going into the center city, but then how are we looking outward? So I would say that's going to be a paradigm shift. I would also say, you know, land is one of those things, it's like a game of tug of war. Sometimes when you get on the rope and you're able to pull some of these land transactions that Stephanie and Kyle and Rose and Isaac and the whole group and GS, they weren't available. And we've had to react to those. So, you know, as we've had that, we've spent more money. And it's the balance of being able to live up to, you know, what we were chartered to preserve land. I think, again, how great we're sitting here in Prexville, over 4,000 acres now. Jeremy's got the number down, he was doing the math during the presentations. But, you know, this is emblematic of the work that we're doing. And I think we have to be nimble enough to move and pivot. You know, as we're taking on the two marinas coming, you know, in the near future, we're going to have to pivot to that. So resources will have to be moved along that. Again, we want them to have a self-sustainability model that's attached to it. But as Kelly said, when we did the first analysis, Leon Younger, Gross Consulting, we were barely getting any cost recovery. The zoo, we were subsidizing 73-some%. Golf courses, we were in the red. And if you look at all of the work that we've been able to do to kind of prop things up, meanwhile, local government fund, the death tax, all of those things got phased out by the state government. Those are almost all gone, if not completely gone. Interest that we used to get is no longer there. So we found new ways to kind of build this park district forward.
It makes me think of a graphic that we could show that, like in the last levy cycle, if we could say, you know, it's like the old UNICEF, you know, $1 buys X amount. Can we do that, where we can show that in this levy cycle, going into the levy cycle, your tax dollar, this got you X plus Y, and maybe we can show X plus Y plus Z.
It seems to me
that part of what we're trying to show here is that the operating efficiency has ramped up substantially, and the return on investment yields, it's not just these results, but I think it's also it's like a rate of return kind of result.
There may be a way to position each one of these kind of categories with that. And I think that this is why we're doing this, because I think it's an opportunity for us to look at that. You know, when you
I'm going to be marketing for the next levy cycle, mm-hmm. how we can show it.
But I think the planning and the selling are two different things. I think the point you're making, Brian, making it very well, is that we can budget inputs to the system, resource inputs, but we can't necessarily measure outputs. We're not as good at that because the climate changes. And the climate, you know, in this Trump situation, the climate may change, you know. But what we can do is we can have a cadre of people that work effectively, and they can be ducted to different areas. But for example, like fundraising, Natalie's area, we should have a certain number of people that we're budgeting for that. And you are the guys that need to tell us what how much you need. You know, how many people do you need to raise, you know, the amount that you think is appropriate. But you're really budgeting inputs, if you see what I mean.
What do you mean between inputs and outputs?
Well, output would be how much money we raise with those three people or whatever it is. Inputs are we think we should have three people. Now, if you look at the guys down at the National Park, they've got a ton of people. I mean, how many do they have in that lake?
Well, they got about the same.
I think if you look at all the groups, there are a bunch of people down there. I mean, maybe it's
you have a big four.
I thought it was like six or something. But so I think measuring the talent first, and then beginning to try to measure outputs from it, when you can really look at the environment you're functioning in.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because when you look at being spread out over 23,000, 500 plus acres, and you look at the pivot, and again I think of measuring output or measuring success, and when you look at roofs and you look at painting and you look at infrastructure and all those other things, they're an outcome, and we're actually doing that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But it's also then as we add what did we add, and as we add function. And when you look at, and it's very hard, now we talk about business analytics and we talk about having to have these analysts on board because of the way these systems work. And so, as a system, we've had to change. And Debbie and I laughed because when I first got here, we were producing this book. We produced a book, 26, 28 of them, we were sending them out, and how we've had to adapt over time. Not all of those things have like a tangible, but they increase our ability to be efficient. So I think it's, we have to look at the monetizing of things. That's where Bill and Gary are here, and listening to the commissioners, taking this economic benefit study, which is done by a third party, which I think is valuable. I think to be doing it the second time, there are some linear things that we can draw from it. I think the experiences where we're seeing, where we were not influencing before between Lyndhurst and Maple Heights, the impact in those areas. We're also looking at a few of these other communities. We can certainly see tangibly the effect of taking over Edgemoor Park when you look at the amount of new construction there. Then we look at Eastside Trails and the Eastside Greenway, which we highlighted here, of how that has the potential to impact. So I think there's some things that we, definitely from this work session, we can go back, take a look at, and start to kind of add those things to it, looking at some surveys and engagements that we've gotten. Kind of a big picture.
One map that struck me, it looked like a big bear claw striation. It's not just our park system, but connectivity along those watersheds. I mean, it was like all roads lead to the lake. That was pretty impressive. I never really visualized it quite that way.
I think we have to be a little careful about the way we communicate the enhancements in the metro park increase taxes. So I think that is a little, I'd much rather deal with it on an emotional basis of what people think about our metro park, more visceral and more personal, more emotional, and then trying to say that because that can come back and bite you.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword because unfortunately we don't thrive unless we have a good tax base.
It's interesting. Natalie kind of broke it out the other day of 60% of the funding comes from property tax, 20% is coming from grants and donations. So you're at 80. I forget how services, so fees. So we started to break it down that way. So we're bringing it back kind of the other way, and then we'll partner with the information here. So we're starting to show and tell the story of what we're doing.
But that's better point. Wait, effective management story.
Yeah. To Dan's point though, this goes back to what I was trying to say. The marketing, but the marketing is going to reflect the accomplishment, what tangibly we've done. And I do believe if we can demonstrate your dollar, your tax dollar, got you this in 2010, 2011, here's what it gets you today. And we can prove it. We can blackboard that it's a return on investment. Because I don't think you get around when you're telling people you need to tax them in order to do this stuff. You can also say that your tax percentage has diminished. We were talking, it was over, 66%, and we actually notched that down close to around 60, I believe, if not even dip below it. So that's one way you can show a snapshot to people that we're actually improving. We're drawing from other sources. We can point to Blackboard that. But by the same token, it's not only that your dollars are you have less, they're doing more. Because you want people to think, oh yeah, we don't need to pay these taxes if they've got it from somewhere else. I mean, there's always that balance, I think, between the perception and the reality of where you draw your resources from and how you use them.
But one of the things, Bill, I think it's really important to go back and, you know, break this up in some way. Like education should be one thing. There are categories. You can put this look back and then look forward. I mean, because it's going to make it so much easier to do this job if you can make it quantitative and then change it. Because look at what you were doing now and say we're spending too much or we're spending too little and do it that way. But when you start with people and dollars, it makes it so much easier to do this. And I think when you go through that exercise, you should split functions. So some people will be doing partly education and partly programming, you know, partly something else. And try to make it as accurate as you can. And then, you know, maybe three years back. And then you can really dig your teeth into this. I think you've done a fabulous job, but it's nice to be able to quantify it as we look forward.
So a couple of things that we have started doing relative to looking back is it's important to look over a period of time. You take the 5% contribution last year and you compare that to what it's been since the beginning of the levy cycle. We've actually contributed 38% of the land purchase costs over the course of 5 years in total. Still a great relationship and something to consider as we go forward. We've seen our grant revenue and our donations go from 7, 8, 9 million in 14, 15, 16-ish to 11 million in 17 to almost 20 million, if I'm not mistaken, 17 to 18 this year, at least that's what we're projecting out. So that's become a much more significant piece, which has driven down that percentage of property taxes. We also keep an eye on what our personnel costs are relative to the tax base. So we are typically at about 85% of our tax revenue is for salaries and benefits, plus or minus 5% in a given year. What's important about that? We've added 10% of land in this levy cycle, roughly, right? Almost 2,000 acres that we've added. We have not spiked that percentage up in terms of the personnel costs. We've kept it at around that 85, 88% mark. We're trying to scale that as much as possible because adding that infrastructure does add cost. We need more rangers on the road. We need more fuel to fuel the cars to get to the more locations. We need more staff to manage those parks and keep them clean. But we don't want it to go up by 10% like the size of the land went up. So we're trying very hard to keep an eye on where we allocate personnel resources, to your point. We're not dialed in on all of those metrics by any means, but we are trying to get more effective in how we use that information that we've got, particularly during this levy cycle. Because if you go too far back, in my opinion, you get pre-economic collapse. It's hard to get good linear data to kind of see where we're at today. Very different circumstances, and the park is very different. Right back then, if you go back 10 years, we probably had rather than 60% of our revenue from taxes. It was probably 70, 75, maybe even 80%. But now it's been diversified over the course of the last 5 to 7 years, and it creates a much different story.
Bill, you may want to use one slice of time for selling the tax situation, and another one for doing your planning. I would recommend that, you know, so you don't mix up selling the assessment with planning what we want to do. And I think, I mean, one of the things that's kind of nice is if you're measuring how much money we spend on land, let's just say hypothetically, you could, you know, one would be how much money we have to spend on land. And that's kind of what you've been doing. You've been just leveraging it as hard as you can. But I think it's more important to measure how much we're spending on land in terms of our financial budgeting for 5 years than it is the overall how much land we get. Do you follow what I mean? Obviously, you want to do as good a job as you can.
I do, but it's, you know, it's one of those things, and just I think in the context of the work session, not all pieces of land are created equal. And so when you look at the availability and the strategic nature of being able to acquire in certain areas, you know, some areas you're going to get 64 acres for a certain, you know, price based on, you know, category 1, 2, 3 wetlands or the resource value, or a strategic connection, you know, as we're looking at leveraging the Windy Park Bridge over to Whiskey Island, air rights and, you know, landing spots and everything else. So it's just, it's one of those things where you really kind of have to, you know, open it up and understand exactly what we're trying to do from kind of a big picture. I mean, connections has been one of the driving forces of this park system. And when you hear across, I would say, all people, that's one of the things that I think is changing the face of this community in a very positive way. So, you know, it's hard then to balance, you know, the land acquisition that's at this juncture versus, you know, the Ellerin property out in, you know, the south east corner of the county at 64 acres. So they each have equal rights and positions to what the work we're doing, but they're not necessarily created equal. So what I'm saying is some of the land that we have to buy has to come from our base, and others have the ability to be leveraged. So yeah. I think it's just, we have to be very careful in how we measure that, because they won't be created equal.
Yeah, I mean, again, we're measuring inputs, not outputs. Outputs, we do the best we can, but the planning, the inputs, that's really the function. You have to know how many people are sitting in these spots. And then you have to allocate, and the jobs will change. That's planning. I mean, no plan comes out the way it's supposed to. I've never seen one happen. And think of commercial situations where you have a product that may just be completely eliminated in 1 year. You know, and you talk about planning problems. You know, that gets really intense. Fortunately, we have, we're fairly reliable. We get tax revenue. We don't have to worry about a competitor from China or something like that. So we have a pretty good way of planning here. And I think the trick is to look back and think about what we did there and say, how do we want to change it going forward?
And that's where the math comes in, with the people and the dollars.
And then the qualitative stuff, there's no way to put it in the plan. You can just say, I want to improve it, or it's okay. Or maybe we're doing too good a job. You know, so you only have 3 choices there. And it just measures how many dollars and how many people you need for these functions. I mean, no one can say we've done a bad job, but we've done a damn good job. And I think now the trick is just to make sure that we have a structure that we can plan against. There is so much stuff that has to be in the plan that you have to start with a backbone. You know, without a backbone, it becomes very difficult to really get quantitative and make it so it all fits together at the end.
Very good. Very well said.
You know, one thing, looking at things, this connected thing, I think there's some connections that we may not want to do. Oh, we all, Metro Park people here, anybody not in the Metro Park?
Tape recording song.
I mean, there's some people that would like us to do more in the inner city, and I think it's probably we should do more there. But picking the ponies, I think, is intensely important.
I mean,
it's even just the land bank alone. That's a whole new area. Maybe in the next 5 years we'll start seeing those strategies. You know, I just think a lot of what we're doing, we're demonstrating that the land use policies that we handle are not just park centric, they're community centric. And I think the more we do that, the more we're going to find we branch into neighborhoods, we branch into areas that I think this park district never really thought about much before.
And I think we're there. I mean, it's one of those things where we look at the matrix, we look at the work, we look at the land bank, we look at pivoting from, you know, Washington, Slavic Village, Ohio and Erie Canal, we look at those corridors.
Because I think it's a redevelopment strategy for this county.
It 100% is, but it's an evolution and it's a process. And I will tell you, the ability to be flexible and nimble is one of the successes of the agency, because as projects and priorities move, funding sometimes moves with them. And when you look at the ability to fund some of these things, sometimes they have to pivot, and our team has to pivot. When you look at, this is a great example, Broadview, Brexville, and North Royalton, plan was done in 08 and 09, PLCI, and it took us that number of years to fund it. So you've really got to be ahead of the curve. I'll tell you, the planning, Kelly and Sarah and Sean and their whole team, we're there. I mean, we're already moving ahead, but it's just a matter of them lining up the sources, and sometimes one can move in front of the other. And that's really why that trail matrix was completed, to be very candid, was to give us this guide to, you know, bring them forward to the commissioners. So
yeah.
I think it was a good thing.
Yeah, and I'll shut up. This discussion reminds me of one other thing. I look at the Tiger Grant as an example, but in the home rule issue. The real plague for so many government entities is their tax bases have pushed out like a gas chromatograph. They've gone out to the borders. And it's great to talk about how you can redevelop inland, but unless you have dollars to support the kind of redevelopment that you want to do, it strikes me that what we have seen in the last several years is there are more outside dollars coming in that we've been able to leverage as a regional entity to fill in areas that the communities themselves probably couldn't afford to do. And I think the more we understand that, the more we can measure that, potentially derive more capital for that purpose, where we can show you sent us that money, we put it in here on the ground, and it'll start yielding. In a way, it's kind of like Minneapolis did years ago, but it had to create a whole new legislative plan to do it. We're never going to find that, I don't think, in Ohio, but if we can leverage our ability to command those dollars and make policy decisions, and to me, that's something that's very exciting.
I think that's the most important part. I mean, I think that's what this has all come down to as an organization, is the partnerships and the people. You said it right, our greatest resource is the team. And the fact that everyone wants to work with the Metro Parks now, and everyone feels that, you know, there's a seat at the table that would bring value, and not just on Metro Parks, but individuals being involved in plans and communities. And
yeah, we're not just prone about it, should we improve it?
Yeah.
Brian, do you think in the next 2 years or in the future we should spend more money building buildings or less money or the same amount of money?
I think it depends. I think the plan, kind of as it's laid forward, we are looking at Huntington Beach area that has been kind of similar to this project here. It's been on the master plan for a number of years. The bathroom facilities, the concession facility are, I would say, some of our poor facilities that need improvement. I would also say from a infrastructure and capital building, we have South Chagrin, Hinckley, and Manikiki's maintenance facilities and our Ohio and Erie Canal. So there are some maintenance facilities we're going to need to be balancing and looking at. I think we're also looking at the zoo very strategically of how do we continue to grow and enhance the 135-year-old zoo for the future. We've done, I think, an amazing job so far, but it doesn't mean we stop. So I think, again, I think that the blend is it's a balance of what we have and where do we need to get to.
But do you think, like, if we spent, you know, $15 million or $20 million the last 5 years, do you think you'll be looking at something higher than that or about the same? Or just assuming that number's right, it's not.
Again, I think it's, you know, as priorities change in the weeds, Ohio and Erie Canal's maintenance facility is owned by the sewer district, and they're taking it back as part of one of their tunnel projects, so our maintenance facility will have to be moved. And so that was a pivot point where we were thinking of planning South Chagrin's or Hinckley's, now we have to pivot there. So I think one of those answers is that it depends to a certain degree. You know, we've got bridges that we need to continue to maintain, Hinckley Lake Dam. So there are things that we're constantly, I think, balancing from an infrastructure standpoint, some of which were kind of, I would say, moved off other plans as priorities kind of change.
Yeah.
But I will tell you that the beauty of consistency is we continue to look at those, we continue to bring them forward,
yeah.
We continue to plan for them, and then as we have resources, we will be making the appropriate, you know, adjustments.
So you'll have sort of Hinckley Lake, you'll have a line, and then you'll be over and under. Yeah. Now, what about education? Should we be spending more on education? You know, once we figure out what we're spending on education, and there's a lot of different education components.
Yeah.
You know, Wendy's got some of them, but, you know, they're in a lot of different baskets here.
Okay.
You more or less, or about the same?
I think it's, again, one of those things where as the community, as when you look at the nature-based preschools. Preschool coming forward, we'll have data on that. Is that something where we want to put more resources into? Do the schools, you know, do they change in the influence? You know, we moved away from the bus program to now a more voucher program. Will that actually enhance more schools coming in? So I think, again, it's this ebb and flow of curriculum. I think Wendy having her, you know, finger on the pulse of it, I would say we are probably one of the top education park districts in the country. And so, you know, does that mean we need to grow more? Does it mean we sustain? Do we continue to pivot? I think, you know, again, when you look at the breadth, you know, this economy here is very unique. You know, this micro, you know, of Northeast Ohio, you know, the amount of resources that we're having to put towards seasonals now, when Dunkin' Donuts is paying $12 an hour for someone to serve coffee and bring donuts, versus, you know, the $8.50, $9.50 isn't really cutting it anymore. So I would say we're going to have to pivot there when you look at sign-on bonuses and everything else. So I think it's a big picture that we're really looking at. But, you know, again, the ability to connect people to nature, that's one of our core missions. And I think, you know, the balance of we covered land, because that was conservation, we covered education, and then I'll just help you out with going to recreation. Again, I think it's a balance and blend. I mean, when we took on the Seneca property, we knew full well that we were going to put money into it, and I think that's kind of a positive. When you look at the ability to potentially bring a disc golf course as we're kind of designing it, that's another opportunity for recreation access. That was one of the things that the community down there, Walton Hills, was looking for, to bring people into the community from other areas to help them. So I think we're going to continue to kind of balance the resources that we have. We want to try to run on a business side of things, cost recovery models. So I think we'll continue. But as we're listening, I think there's some things that our team needs to go back to and pull some more data together to make the decisions.
So it's ultimately, you're going to have to take, and you have to put in a number on this stuff. Mm-hmm. It's going to change. It's going to be wrong. And that whole purpose of this is to try to bracket it a little bit so we're not too far off.
Well, I think it's, you know, to your point, I think, you know, when you first came on, I think, you know, how do you project out 10 years? You know, that's a huge, you know, it's a huge responsibility of the agency. And, you know, just because you hear from someone, well, you didn't take it. It's like, we have an account and we have to balance it, and we have competing priorities sometimes. And, you know, I think we've shown and demonstrated, we've come back to and we've improved, we've kept pulling the string forward, and then we were challenged by the board to find alternative ways. And Sean McHugh's a great example of balancing, you know, the budget and golf. Chris Gore's a great example of bringing the zoo numbers up and getting that to that 50, 52, 55%. And then Kristen, Natalie, and Karen, and that whole group bringing more funds in. I think it's, again, it's this genuine balance of what we're trying to do. We're not just going after every dollar. We're doing things that are purposeful, that follow the mission of the park district.
It's a synergy.
So.
Yeah.
Very good.
It's a dynamic.
It is. Very good.
Very exciting.
There's a good presentation. Right.
There's a motion to adjourn to go into executive session.
Or not adjourn. Motion to go into executive session for the purpose of property.
Do a roll call. Dan Moore?
Yes.
Debbie Gary?
Yes.
Lee Springer?
Yes.
I want to ask that the staff actually vacate the room. This is the only place that we actually have. So if you want to assemble, you can use the bathroom.